Thank you.
Thank you very much, André. And now I would like to give the floor to Didi Tato with her presentation. If there are any questions, I'm sorry, no, I didn't ask if there are any questions. So please, any question that you would like to ask before the Didi's presentation.
Well, we will have a general discussion at the end of the session, but if you have any immediate responses to these presentations, please raise them now. Yeah, there is, right?
Good morning. I would have a question about these two applications, which you mentioned that were developed with China and the U.S. If you could say something more about them.
Zapia, and
this is
the other one was TikTok?
The first one is, no, I think what I mentioned, that's
You meant, yeah, Zapia?
slide, that's Zapia.
Okay, so Zapia basically is a very interesting case because Zapia is basically an application for sharing Quran and other religious texts of Islamic origin, which at some point basically meant that the CCP itself, I mean, like the Chinese entities themselves actually supported basic prolification of these documents. But then later, when basically the situation changed in Xinjiang, state entities used the same methods used to prolification of these texts to monitor who actually downloaded them, monitor who actually used them, and in Xinjiang basically flagged them as potentially radicals, religious extremists that were later sent, as far as we know, to the camps or basically repressed in some other means. But the application is still widely used in the rest of the world. Again, the data go, whenever the Chinese side wants, it goes to the Chinese entities. So technically this could be used not only against Uyghurs themselves, it could now be used against Hui, another Chinese or another ethnicity of usually Muslim faith in China that is now actually being targeted by the same methods that were used in Xinjiang against Uyghurs and Kazakhs and others, but could technically in the end be used even against other citizens of different countries who are of Muslim origins, because again, the party state would have this information on their religious practices and the text they've been reading. So that's Zapia. And again, like what was mentioned, is it's an application that was developed, I think, in Silicon Valley by lots of U.S. money. I mean, in the end, it's a Chinese entity, but lots of Western money was used to develop this application, as many other applications and the facial recognition systems, AI, everything to some degree is linked or somehow Western enabled. And what was the other application? Was it TikTok? The other thing?
TikTok is, I think it's a different.
Was it TikTok? TikTok,
About
yeah.
TikTok.
I mean, TikTok is an interesting application because it actually is sort of reverse creating the Great Firewall of China in the sense that TikTok, as far as we know, is completely separate from its Chinese equivalent Douyin, even though it's very similar platform and the messaging system, it works very similarly, the owners are the same, but and I might be mistaken right now because I haven't prepared for this question specifically in this presentation, but I think it was that basically whenever you're using TikTok abroad, you can only use like the abroad TikTok, but you can't access content from within China and other way around, which is for example, why we have seen this used by Uyghur activists to gather information on Douyin, the Chinese version, in Xinjiang, but they would have to use basically Chinese IPs, so basically through VPN pretending to be in China, in order to use Douyin, while, for example, being in Australia and gathered information on what's going on in Xinjiang. It's actually quite interesting. Definitely recommend reading up on it, because basically some of these activists, they basically had to teach the algorithm of Douyin to give them the content that they were seeking, because Xinjiang right now is basically under complete information embargo, so getting information out of there that is not censored is actually quite problematic. And with TikTok, as in like the abroad version, we've now seen more and more countries and entities raising concerns over basically the data being censored and curated by CCP censors or censors employed by the company behind this application residing in China, which means that a lot of content can then be curated in order to basically create a landscape that is more favorable to the CCP state and party policies abroad. And for example, most recently, we have actually seen a case where a person who basically published a short video where she would talk about Xinjiang abuses, having her account suspended over policy breach, like the community guidance being breached, just because she posted a Xinjiang video. So obviously the censorship is there, and it's Chinese censorship, even though that many people don't actually know that TikTok is of Chinese origin.
Maybe I would like to add one thing. Last time when Philippe had a presentation at People's at Need for the Vietnamese activists, they were very concerned about TikTok and asking a lot of questions because they said it's very popular in Vietnam without knowledge that how dangerous it can be. So any more questions? Over there.
Thank you, Andrea, for a very interesting presentation. I have a question about one of the policy recommendations. You recommended that there should be more scrutiny and media coverage. And to be honest, that's my perception also of the media coverage that is happening in Estonia. And I would like your ideas or how could we increase the media coverage? Because I understand right now there's most of the media coverage, at least in Estonia, is on Hong Kong and activities in Hong Kong, but what is happening both in Hong Kong and Xinjiang are equally horrible, and there should be a more balanced representation. And my question is, what should be done, or what could be done?
Thanks. I think I'll take this question. It touches on the topics that we originally wanted to discuss in the channel discussion, but since it was raised here, I'll answer right now. Well, this is the purpose of Project Synopsis from the very beginning, to bring these issues from the expert community into the mainstream media, in collaborating very closely with the media. Because one of the obstacles for media to tackle these issues is that in many countries, certainly in most of the East European countries, Central and East European countries, there isn't much in-house knowledge of China in the mainstream media, and especially now with the economic situation being what it is, they hardly have any people on the foreign desks, not to mention people who would specifically deal with China. So that's why we consider ourselves to be sort of an outside production hub for the media, in a sense, and work very closely with them to bring attention to some of the important stories that otherwise might not really reach the public. Thanks.
Thank you, Martin.
Morning. I have a point, and at the end I will have a question. So many times I met with the answer that also the other Western companies gathering data of users, and that many governments spying through technologies, not only China.
But my point is that there is maybe not enough debate about for what purpose is Chinese regime gathering this information in Europe and how he use it. I have a practical example. In 2014 was held a 16+1 summit in Belgrade in Serbia, and activists from different countries from Europe went to Belgrade to protest against human rights abuses in China. Two people from Croatia and one woman from Slovenia had refused entry to Serbia. Two Finnish activists were deported from Belgrade airport. Seven Bulgarian activists, two Russians, one Finland and one Slovakian, were arrested and held in detention cell during the summit. And the punchline is that the Serbian police waiting on them on the airport and in the hotels they booked before, and they waited for certain people. And they know when and how they arrive, which hotel they booked, and how they looks like. So we have 14 different people from different European countries, closely monitored by Chinese intelligence, which gave all informations to Serbian police to arrest them, because they know that these people are going to protest on the street during the summit. Serbian activists made a documentary film about this event. It is called Blacklisted. And so I think that if we will not speak about that, how Chinese regime is using this data, so people can say that also others are collecting and stealing the data, and that is normal state of things. So thank you, and I want to ask you if you know about some real cases of misusing of this collecting data by Chinese regime in Europe.
Thank you for your question. I mean, this is a big question you've placed. You know, there's a lot of research underway. Can you clarify what exactly you mean by co-opting Chinese data in Europe? Who co-opting, and what exactly are you asking?
Okay, so that there is a threat that Chinese intelligence is collecting data about people in Europe, about citizens, and that is not in the public discussion. It's not very clear. What danger is this? Because okay, many other companies in Western are collecting data, but
this is actually a huge issue that, and there's research underway on it right now. Long story short, it's my firm opinion that indeed Chinese companies that are linked to the party state are collecting enormous amounts of data about people in Europe, not just in Europe, also in the US and in Africa and elsewhere in the world. And this data has been taken back to China on a daily basis. And in fact, there's a very good paper out there right now by somebody called Samantha Hoffman, titled Engineering Consent, which has more detail on that. It's come out of Australia. And, you know, to tie it to your issue about, to your point about data collection in the West, for example, in the United States, by Facebook and such like, I mean, you know, that's obviously true too. And I think that what we're seeing here is, although there are enormous differences in the political systems behind these two data collection efforts, one of them is privately driven with some government connection, the other is almost overwhelmingly party state driven. You know, there's. I think that what we need to do here is look at this in terms of something that I have heard referred to as data colonialism, and that's essentially what's happening. Is that people in Europe, just to stick to Europe for a bit, are essentially being colonized by this sort of data extraction practices. If you view data as the new oil, which is a bit of a cliche, but probably quite accurate. Then, you know, we're seeing a process of almost colonization of our minds and bodies. Now you have to sort of then, you know, differentiate between
what is the purpose of that colonization and how dangerous is it to the individual and to the autonomy of the individual? And there you come into really big questions of technology and humanity, which actually I wanted to touch on in my own talk. So maybe I'll just sashay straight into that.